You're listening to Black Hastings Speaks, a production of UC Hastings Law and its Center for Racial and Economic Justice. I'm your host, Arika Smith. This series was created in the aftermath of the killings of Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, and George Floyd, and amidst the 2020 uprising sparked by these tragedies. The goals of the project are to foster healing, build connections, encourage systemic change, and deepen empathy on issues of anti-blackness. In this episode, you'll hear a discussion between Lauren Hampton and Marcus Kennedy Grimes. They are both second-year law students at the college and co-presidents of the Black Law Students Association. Lauren holds a master's degree in public health from UC Berkeley and completed undergrad at the University of Pittsburgh. Marcus, who grew up in Oakland, is a graduate of Howard University and is one of the inaugural California Scholars, a scholarship program that offers full rides to a select group of students who graduated from historically Black colleges and universities.
I had a story where I was driving in Virginia, and I had been going over the speed limit. I was speeding. And the police officer, you know, pulled me over and got out of his car, walked up, and he, you know, had his hand on his holster. And, you know, my friend was in the passenger seat. And I had only been driving for around a year or so, so I was still kind of new and obviously scared. This is my first time getting pulled over. And I had obviously heard so many stories about all these interactions with police, and we're on the side of the highway. And it was just a really scary time for me. So I had my foot on the brake, but the car was not in park. So the officer asked for license and registration, went to go get the registration of my license. And as I was pulling it out, I shifted my weight on my foot. So the car started to roll. And the officer immediately pulled out his gun, points it, and he's screaming and yelling, you know, like, stop the car, stop the car. And he's scared. And I can understand that he's scared. But I am 10 times more afraid because now I have a gun pointed at me. And it's all kind of a part of the system where I think that had I been maybe a different skin color, I might not have scared him so much. You know, he might have seen that I was just as scared and might have recognized that, hey, this guy isn't trying to run away or anything. He's just nervous. And then you go to Howard, where for 4 years, I basically didn't deal with any racial inequalities. There is obviously some other social issues, classism and things like that, that, you know, permeate that system. But not dealing with that race element, where I'm wondering if my professor might subtly be making a racially motivated comment, you know, that some type of consideration or decision was made based on my race. Never have to worry about that for 4 years. And I think that was a blessing as much as it might have been a curse. I think a lot of people are scared of being a part of that system because then you have to come back to the real world where that's not the case.
It does feel like every space that I've entered into, which a lot of them have been predominantly white spaces, including my undergrad, including in grad school, it feels like if you're one of the few people of color, and especially one of the few Black people, that it's almost your duty and responsibility to be in a leadership position. But for me, that's something that I feel comfortable doing. You know, I love Zora Neale Hurston. She's one of my favorite authors. And she said, if you're silent about your pain, they'll kill you and say you enjoyed it. And I sort of think about that as far as it being my duty and my responsibility to take my privilege, the educational privilege that I have, the whatever economic privilege that I have, all the privileges that I have, and be a voice for those who are voiceless and those who are silent. And so while it's a lot of work, it has been a lot of work in my undergrad, being in leadership for various minority and Black affiliated organizations. When I went to work in a corporate space, I also headed diversity inclusion efforts internally at my job. And then in graduate school, when I went to graduate school, we didn't have a Black specific organization. So I helped found the Black Advocates for Equity and Health at Berkeley School of Public Health. And that was a lot of work. But there also seemed to be a lot of support in that space from faculty members, from staff, from administrators, really gave me all the resources that I needed and all the support that I needed to get the work done. Now at Hastings, having you as my co-president is great. We still have a lot of work to do. We've got a great executive board, but it feels more like us showing the administration, showing faculty members, showing our classmates what we need to have happen, the ways that we need to be respected, the ways that we need to be supported, as opposed to them offering their support outright. And I think that's what's made these last few weeks, especially, you know, we're early on in our presidency. That's what's made these weeks and these conversations so daunting and so exhausting. It's because not only are we making requests, but we're educating at the same time. And that's not really a space that I've had to be in before. I also feel so blessed and so fortunate to be able to be in a position of leadership. Both my grandmothers cleaned houses for a living. My grandfather had an eighth grade education. So I'm coming from a place where, you know, my immediate parents, you know, went to college, and my mother's got a graduate degree. But beyond that, I'm not coming from a place of really intergenerational wealth or, you know, like some of our other peers who have had great uncles and grandparents and people who have gone to Hastings, and there's multiple generations of lawyers. I'll be the first lawyer in my family. So it's heavy, and it is a big burden. I do feel like I carry the weight of other Black women to come on my shoulders, and like I do have to represent for all the Black women out there, but it is a privilege and an honor to be able to do so.
It is a very interesting experience to watch, you know, classmates right now hanging out at parks, doing their social distancing, of course, but hanging out at parks and kind of enjoying this time period. When I'm at home, you know, I just went to a protest on Saturday, a protest for my life, telling people that my life matters, that police should not be killing me or my brothers or my sisters or anyone who looks like me. And I think that it's at times tough to kind of do what you said, is you educate individuals about what your struggles are, because this is my life. You know, this is what I deal with on a day-to-day basis. You know, seeing police, having conversations about what type of clothes I can wear, whether or not my clothes are too dark, having to decide whether or not I want to walk at a certain time at night because maybe I get harassed by the police because I'm in the wrong area. You know, these are things that run through my mind all the time, subconsciously. But I also understand that there is a difference, and I think that it's on us, unfortunately, to educate as much as it is for individuals who don't know to be made aware. So as much as they can go get the knowledge, if I have the opportunity to educate, I'm going to educate. And it's stressful, it is draining, it is tiring, but I think the work is worth it. And I think that that's what kind of keeps me going, is knowing that even if they might be living a different life, as long as they're open to understanding, I'm willing to educate and willing to share my story, because like I said, it's a unique story and I feel like it's important for them to hear that.
As a Black person, there's no amount of wealth, of education, et cetera, that's gonna take away your Blackness. That's gonna make you look less threatening in the eyes of the police if they don't know who you are and all they see is a Black body. So, you know, I do feel like that's an important conversation to have, and one that I actually had with one of my white friends last week, saying, you know, I'm no different from a Breonna Taylor, right? I live in a Black household with my Black man and I sleep. That could have been me. There's no reason why it couldn't have been me, right? We eat ice cream, we drive, we've probably changed lanes without putting on a turn signal before. And so I do really want people to understand that this is a Black issue.
Part of being African-American, being Black in America, is this really weird, I don't want to say situation, but it is a situation where individuals will be murdered, Black people will be murdered, we'll see it on television, we're outraged, see it, you know, maybe at 6 p.m. that night, we go to sleep thinking about it, and we wake up the next morning, and we go to work, we go do what we do like normal, and everybody's, you know, just kind of treating it like it's a normal day. Hey, how you doing? How's your morning? You know, and we've just seen someone get murdered, and someone that we could identify with be taken away. And what do you feel about having to deal with that? How does that affect you?
It's traumatic. It's really traumatic. I think that in addition to the expectation that we carry about our day, the thought of knowing, or really just seeing others around you unaffected is traumatizing. It really makes you feel like you're on another planet, like you are privy to something that no one else knows, like you have this dark secret that no one else, has heard about. And in actuality, that's not the case. It's just that other people who are affected less, or those who are unaffected, have the option to not engage. They have the option to and the privilege to not think about it before going to bed, or to not think about it before waking up in the morning, and for it to not have an impact on their day. And I think that, it's a lot of, Black people have had to do this their whole entire lives, since coming to this country 400 years ago, and it's a lot of intergenerational trauma to just have to push your grief aside, push your pain aside. And it's this constant rhetoric and this story that keeps getting told that, our grief, our pain doesn't matter. It's not widespread, it's not wide felt. And so it's, hurtful, and something that I'm still trying to learn how to deal with. But I think, at least me personally, drawing attention to it and, not being fake when I'm asked, "Oh, how's your day going?" But really saying some things that might make some people uncomfortable. Like, "Oh, I'm upset today because I saw another Black person get murdered in the streets and nothing's being done and no one seems to be angry." Having to say some of those things as opposed to just the standard, "I'm fine, how are you?" How's that been for you?
Doesn't really do anything to change them. I remember when I went to work the day after Nia Wilson died, some people had mentioned it, but it was literally a normal day for people. My supervisor was an African American woman, and when she heard, she was scared for me, but we had a whole 2 hour conversation about it. And I think that day, because she knew that I was dealing with that, it was a very light day for me. But for others, it was business as usual. No, that can't be it. It really cannot be it. If you consider yourself an ally, it has to be more than that, because I can assure you that Black people do not go, "Oh, that's really sad. Now let me go, think about something else because I have the privilege of doing that." It's like, no, that's really sad. That's really messed up. Now, what are we going to do to change this?
Thank you for listening to Black Hastings Speaks. To hear all of the episodes in this series and learn more about the participants, go to www.uchastings.edu/speak.